Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be talking about a subject that a couple of years ago was pretty hot in the news. Then it's sort of been pushed to the side, as is typical, because other things have been in the forefront. What it is, we are going to be discussing, MRSA, we're going to be discussing how to take a proactive positioning to being able to keep our wellness the way we should. And more than that, if you should find someone that has to go to the hospital or if you're going to have to be in a certain environment, you need to know about these things. This is not fear-mongering. This is information. And my guest today, Julia Pilas, is a woman that has had a very direct personal experience with this. She's written a book called On the Street Where You Live. This is so important, and it's something I hope that you will share with friends. I'd like to welcome to the Donna Sebo Show, Julia Pilas. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me, Donna.
Julia, I have to let my audience know that you're a businesswoman.
Oh,
you
correct,
love
yes.
To write. And you've always had a very, very positive attitude about life.
Right.
And then you entered into a personal experience that really set you in a spin. It's literally changed your life and made you not only become even more passionate with your writing, but now it's like you've got to reach people with information because no one is talking about this very much. It's being brushed away with an airbrushing of indifference, you might say. And it has to do with your dad, Vincent. Tell us about what happened with him. He was a very vibrant man. The picture of him is right in front of the book, On the Street Where You Live. Tell us your story.
Well, Donna, you're right. My dad was very, very vibrant. He was an 81-year-old man. Very tall, very stately, walked around with his head up and his shoulders back, and about 10 years prior to this ordeal, he was told by the doctor that he had an aneurysm on his aorta, and at that point it was just tiny, it wasn't growing, it wasn't doing anything, and the doctor said, you know, not to worry, we'll just monitor it, and you know, there's nothing to be concerned with as of yet. So for 10 years, they monitored it, and it wasn't growing. However, I would say probably 5 years ago, because my dad is dead now 3 years, about 5 years ago, it began to grow, and it began to grow quite rapidly. An aneurysm in the aorta is actually a bubble that develops mm-hmm. in the aorta that can burst. And it's when it bursts, there's just nothing you can do. It's a death that there's nothing that can be done with it. So at that point, he was told he needed to have an operation. So, okay, well, the first thing you do when you need to have an operation is you contact a surgeon. That's what we thought. I mean, that's the way it's always been. So we decided to do our homework, and we started to look into surgeons and see what their resumes were, if you will, and the surgeon that we chose had an impeccable resume. We were very, very certain that he would be the man for the job, and we were very at ease at that point. I mean, we knew it was a very difficult operation for anyone, especially an 81-year-old man, but we knew we had the right guy, and as it turned out, we did. We did, in fact, have the right guy. My father came out of the surgery. The surgeon's name, first words, I'm sorry, were, he's an old guy, but you know what? I think he's going to make it. He was on the operating table for 5 hours, and we were so happy at that point. So it was probably the first time we saw him was in ICU, and he was swollen, and he was still in anesthesia, and looking good nonetheless. His vital signs were excellent, and we were happy with the prognosis. However, it was the third day that we found out that he had what is referred to as MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. Didn't have a clue. It was an infection as far as we knew. So, okay, well, he's got an infection. People get infections every day, and you'll give him an antibiotic, and he'll be fine. Well, so we thought. That evening when I was at the hospital, the nurse said to me, you better get your dad's affairs in order. We thought she was out of her mind. Get my dad's affairs in order. The doctor's given him a great prognosis. He's got an infection. You'll give him an antibiotic, and there you have it. Well, unfortunately, that's not there you have it. And the staff members, the nurses, the doctors, they know when a patient gets this infection, it's a death sentence. That's it. It's over. We didn't know that. They're so immune to it, I suppose. It just came out of her mouth like very matter-of-factly. And, you know, it's just something that, you know, goes along with the territory, and here you have it. Well, we didn't realize any of that at that point, Donna.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, we would just, okay, to the doctors and the infectious specialists and disease specialists, and, okay, what are you going to do, and what's the next game plan, and then as the days went on, my dad got worse, and then more needles were implanted, and operations began because his incision was starting to break open. It was an infection that more than likely had gotten into his system during the surgery, and it mutates. As a matter of fact, and I think you read the book. I sent you one.
Mm-hmm.
I described it as my dad being an incubator, where germs and infections were infesting. The germs actually and the infection actually used my dad's body as an incubator to grow and infest.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that the incision opened up. Eventually, these germs, this infection, opened the incision up, and now they had to start operating on him to try to close the incision. And every time they tried to close one area, another area opened up, and infectious fluids were spilling out from all over, and his it was just, and more antibiotics, and he had to go on. I mean, it was just one thing after another. It was just a 5-week nightmare. But all that we can think about at that point in time was, okay, what's the next game plan? What are we going to do next? And you don't realize what's going on. You know what's going on, but you don't dwell on it because you've got that push to get him through it.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, what did in fact kill my dad, I mean, and his death certificate does say MRSA, ultimately it was the antibiotics. What had happened was they were so strong, and there is no antibiotic to fight this superbug. That's why they refer to it as a superbug. It was so strong that it actually damaged the ability for his blood to clot. His blood no longer had the ability to clot. It actually destroyed whatever medical term that is. The last operation that he had, the doctors didn't even realize it. They were going to implant a pick in him to try to get him to eat because he hadn't really eaten
mm-hmm.
for 5 weeks. It was just the intravenous that they were giving him. And he came out of surgery, and once again we thought, okay, well, this is going to work, and this is going to be great. And all of a sudden he started hemorrhaging. And they brought him back into surgery thinking that they had maybe quite possibly punctured something. But no, what had happened instead was that they realized that they hadn't punctured anything. Instead, his blood no longer had the ability to clot. And that night, he died. They said that they would give him some more medication, but that if it didn't work, then that there was nothing more that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And that night was a gruesome, grueling night. And it was over the next morning.
Now, in your book, one of the things that I really appreciated was the description, and it's in much more detail in your book, about what you have just talked about. And one of the things that has occurred through the years, and I've heard this from medical professionals as well as lay people, is that the standards in many hospitals, in fact, I'm up here in the Pacific Northwest, and we had a major hospital shut down because of rats and other things that were found, and it was years before they shut it down. I mean, this wasn't something that had just been going on for 6 months. There had been complaints by people. There had been all kinds of investigations. The health department had been out, and finally,
Right.
They got past the politics, and they closed it down. Well, a lot of people were affected.
Right.
The one thing anyone knows, if they have had any kind of training, and medical people know this, is that how important it is to keep things sanitized, and how important it is that if anybody has a contagious situation of any kind, there's isolation. You really need to keep them isolated, whether it's from family, whether it is from other patients. And we have become so lackadaisical about this. And again, I've heard this from medical professionals. And I had a, I have a friend who is a minister, and she is at a church that's near a hospital in the Pacific Northwest. And as it turned out, it was a children's hospital. And she went over to do her ministerial calls, which she always does. Unknown to her, and this was a couple of years ago, there had been a MRSA epidemic in that hospital. And they weren't letting anybody know, because at that time it was pretty hot and heavy in the news. It's airborne, and you can get it through your air systems. We do not have any way of keeping this out of the air systems, to the best of my knowledge. If any of my listeners know, I'd love to know about it. But that's something, staph germs, other things. This is just a reality of life. And they, she went through, she came back, and it was like within 2 weeks she was ill. She couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. And of course, when you're a minister and you'll be going into different hospital rooms, you're moving around. And she was diagnosed with MRSA. Now, I found out about this. I had had exposure to her. But fortunately, it was at a time when I guess she was no longer contagious. But here is someone that tried to isolate herself because she knew that she was carrying something that was very contagious. And so you talk about being in the hospital and a nurse, after you had gone into the room that ordered you to pick something up, you had, what did you put down, a purse?
Right, it was my bag.
You put your purse down.
Right,
now think about
right.
this. She had put her purse down in the room. Tell us what he said to you.
Well, I was suiting up because we needed to suit up. We had to put our robes on and our gloves on, and I put the bag down, and and he said, pick your bag up. And I said, I thought he was concerned that somebody was going to take it. And I said, why? Nobody will take it. Nobody's going to take it. He said, no, your dad's bodily fluids fell on the floor this afternoon, and you're going to take MRSA home with you. Well, you've got to be kidding me. This afternoon, they fell on the floor because they, the fluids were just oozing out of my dad, and they had a bag mm-hmm. attached to him. And I suppose when they were changing it, the fluids had spilt onto the floor. And well, why didn't you clean it up? You know, not only am I going to take this out into the community, and that's how we're getting MRSA out in the community, because we're actually taking it from the hospitals and bringing it into the community.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
what about all those other compromised patients, those sick patients? You're taking it into their room as well. You know, they're not isolating these MRSA patients. You know, years back, Donna, the surgical floor was just that, the surgical floor, where only the patient and the staff were allowed on it. And the staff was suited up in their scrubs with their hat, with their mask, with their gloves and booties. And that's how they went on that surgical floor. Now, there's no such thing as a surgical floor. It's an operating room that we passed right by, which I didn't realize. And I touch on in my book on that as well. It had been many moons ago that I had been in the hospital. I was rushed in for surgery, and I remember that surgical floor like it was yesterday, and I was a kid. And when I asked my sister, what floor is my dad on, she said, oh, he's right down the hall. You passed him. The operating room is right down the hall that we just passed, and so did hundreds of other people just pass. And I just thought to myself, well, Jesus, we've come a long way. You know, we've really, mm-hmm. I guess, come a long way that we must be that good that we don't need to be concerned with germs. Well, needless to say, I found out otherwise.
But, that's very true. That's very true. And you look at what's happening in Haiti right now.
Yeah.
You look at what's happening in Haiti. Here is a devastating physical situation that nobody had any control over that's affecting the lives of millions of people. And the biggest challenge that the attending nurses and physicians have is infection.
Right.
Because they have no way of keeping things clean. You have flies. You have all kinds of insects that will feed on blood. You have all of these compounding situations, and more people will die because of infections, a lack of cleanliness.
But when you stop and think that 300,000 Americans each year are dying, you know what, Donna? At least Haiti has an excuse. What in God's sake is our excuse?
Mm-hmm.
This is the United States of America in the 21st century, not a third world country in the Stone Age. How dare anybody say that the way my dad died should be expected and accepted? And that's what's happening.
Well,
I mean, that's
what's happening.
I agree with
you. I agree with you. And I'm not saying there are not conscientious medical personnel. Look at this person that cared enough that said, pick up your bag, clean it off. You've got to disinfect it. He could not, he wasn't the person assigned to do the cleanup work.
Right.
But he was conscientious enough to say, I don't want you to be sick.
Right.
This is what you need to be aware of. So you have these people who are doing the best they can, and it comes from the top. The people at the top have to set the standards, and this is something that really is important. And I'll tell you what, when I went to Russia in 1992, the attitude of people then was, you do not go into the hospital because if you go into the hospital, you're going to die.
Mm.
That was absolute. It was just a tragedy. The physicians didn't even have any supplies to work with. They were like the people in Haiti today. So there you have that. And today, in this country, I have heard similar stories from people that have gone through very much the same thing, unless the people in charge of the hospital really understand and mandate those standards that go all the way down the line. And even simple soap and water can make a big difference, but you have to clean. You really do have to clean. Air systems have to be maintained and cleaned, and because stuff goes through the air, and it's invisible. They don't know. I've known of people that have gotten staph infections in hospitals. And
Well, my dad had that too. He had MRSA, he had sepsis, and he had yeast. He had everything. He went into septic shock. I mean, it was just. And this was Donna, this was a course of 3 days.
Yes,
three
it happens
days.
After that. It happens after that. And then with antibiotics, many times. And again, it depends on what the condition is and what's going on. And they're doing the best that they can. They did the best that they knew how to do. They thought the antibiotics were going to be doing it. But this MRSA is just an indicator of many other considerations. Now, you were chatting with me before we went on air. And this, to me, is significant. And it's about the New Jersey Police Department. Tell us what's happening with them.
Well, about a couple of months ago, I was contacted by an officer, a correctional officer, and he asked that he knew about my book, he knew about my quest, and that's exactly what it is. And you're right, I am a businesswoman, but I will not, I cannot sit back and watch another loved one or fellow American die the way my dad died. So that's my quest in life. I mean, besides what I do, this is my quest in life. I will try to get the word out to as many people as I can. Well, he did hear about me, and he asked that they have a magazine, and the police officers are having one heck of a time battling MRSA themselves. It appears that while they're taking the inmates off to the hospitals to be checked, they're coming back with MRSA, whether it be from the hospital facility itself or from the inmate. But these correctional officers are getting MRSA, and the state is saying to them, this is not job-related. So when you get it, when they get it, they're totally on their own. They will not give them workman's comp. These officers are out of work for weeks and months on end. Once they run out of their their sick pay. There's no other money coming in. They can't be with their families because they're so infected, and it's just a tragedy. So they've asked me to write a monthly article to again, awareness, to educate, to give them stories, to let the higher ups know that this is what my dad went through. These are not hearsay. These are not just numbers. These are true stories that I'm going to tell you that took place in this hospital. And you've got to understand that, yeah, these guys are coming back from these hospitals. Unless you're going to protect them going in there and make sure they're protected when they come out, suit them up, put masks on them, get them to wear the clothing, and then get that clothing off of them before they come out of that hospital, then it's very likely these officers are going to be bringing the MRSA back to the facility and to the other officers as well. What I'm writing, and I'm just getting finished with the article today because I have to give it to them the 5th of every month, he asked me if I would give him a little bit of background about the flu epidemic versus the MRSA epidemic. And back in April when this flu epidemic first came out, or we were told that there was going to be an epidemic, mm-hmm. I thought to myself, this is quite interesting. Every TV station I'm putting on, every radio station I'm putting on, everyone is talking about the swine flu, H1N1 as it's referred to as now. And I thought to myself, boy, this is great, but why is this being given so much attention to when MRSA is out there and it's this dangerous, it's killing 300,000 Americans a year? So I sort of thinking about it, Don, I thought to myself, well, you know what I came up with? The fact that the swine flu is something that we can blame on Mexico, we have no problem dealing with. But when you were talking about infections in hospitals, well, you know what? That's our irresponsibility. We cannot blame that on anybody but ourselves. And so that's why we don't want to talk about it. That's why we don't want to deal about it. And nobody's having us be held accountable for it. I called the Board of Public Health as soon as my dad. Well, at first when my dad died, sadness, heartbroken. Mm-hmm. And then after that, when you've overcome that, then there's anger, Donna. There's anger for what he went through. There's anger for what so many others are going through. And there's anger that why isn't something being done about it? So I called the Board of Health. They went in there and did nothing. Nothing. The copy of the letter that I got was a thank you very much for allowing us to enter your facility. It was very kind of you, and you know, you were most gracious. They couldn't have been nicer to this hospital. Not that they should have been mean, don't get me wrong, but they were there to do a job. If they would have taken a little bit of a sample off the floor in that hospital, I am quite sure they would have come up with a lot more than a simple thank you very much for allowing us to be there. And God knows what else a sample of. They would have come up with a lot more problems, Donna, but they don't want to. They don't want to ruffle feathers. They don't want to be, I guess, the bad guy. Well, at any rate, what I came up with was for the swine flu, the H1N1, was back in April when they first realized that we had this first case that came from Mexico. Well, they implemented everything you can possibly think of. Multi-level approach controls to eliminate infections and prevent transmission within the facility. This is what they implemented just in the hospitals. General recommendations, precautions, and vaccinations for all healthcare personnel as well as healthcare facility personnel, including someone like the police officers that would be going in there or a clergy member that would be going in there, wearing of gowns and masks if you're going in there, isolating a patient. Well, a long list of precautions they took immediately. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right. CDC got right on a case. Wonderful. Well, the numbers came out as follows. In May, April there was the one case. In May there was 1,000. In June there were 18,000. From July to August, no data until students began to return to school. Vaccination started in September, and then the bottom line is at the end result from April till now, 55 million, these are only Americans, the Americans, just our country, 55 million were affected, 246,000 were put into the hospital, and 11,160 deaths. Well, I'm saddened by those 11,000 deaths. Don't get me wrong. One death is one too many. But here we have 11,000 deaths. Now, do we say, well, because they acted immediately? Is that why we did not have the epidemic that they thought we were going to have? We should be thankful that the only 11,000 people died, and then think to ourselves, okay, this is the end result. When the CDC gets on board, when the CDC gives recommendations and precautions and demands on these facilities, do you see what can be done, Donna?
Mm-hmm.
When the government steps in and does their job to protect us Americans, that tells the whole story. Why on earth won't they do it for MRSA?
The Center for Disease Control, have you ever approached them regarding this? What kind of a response did you get?
Just simply that they're giving money to the hospitals for infection control. That's it, just money. They're not making any demands. And you know what, Donna, along with everything else that I do in my life, I was also an administrator in a school for 20-some-odd years. I just recently retired a year ago, and little children. And this is how best that I can describe what's happening. When you've got a little child in school, and if the child is misbehaving, well, if you turn your back on that child and you don't make them be held, they're not being held accountable, the child is going to continue misbehaving. Well, these hospitals are not being made accountable. So in reality, why should they do what they're supposed to do? Nobody's saying anything to them. Nobody's making them responsible. Nobody's holding them accountable. So they're going to continue to misbehave just like a little child does.
Now, on your dad's death certificate, MRSA was listed as a cause. Also, you got the information about the antibiotics. So you are very fortunate in that you had this kind of clarity of information that was given regarding your dad's death.
Right.
There's a lot of other people that wouldn't have had this. Where can people get statistics or information on the effect of MRSA
in their community?
The hospitals, in their community. How can you get information on this?
Well, I'm sure each state is different. Here in New Jersey, our governor, and this is the only reason why I truly believe that why we've got this law that was passed. Our governor was in a very bad accident a few years back, and he's lucky to be alive. But besides his injuries, the first thing and the foremost thing that they were so concerned with was infection.
Mm-hmm.
And when it hit home, that he knew that infection would have been what would have killed him before the accident was what could have killed him. It was then when it hit home that he implemented and passed a law that our hospitals must, if asked, be given the infectious disease numbers from their hospital. Now, that's not to say that they're going to do anything different. The only thing that's to say is that you or me, before we go into the hospital, would say, okay, what's your infectious disease rate? And if they say that it's off the wall, and it is made public as well, too. It is on a website here in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
All the hospitals have what their infectious disease rate is. Now, with that said, some hospitals may find that intimidating. Some hospitals may say, oh, my God, this is, you know, we can't have this. You know, look at, this is terrible. People are never going to come here. You know, we're going to be closed down. While other hospitals could care less. And while the other hospitals and my dad's hospital was extremely high when the report came out in infection, do they care, Donna? No. They're still going to get their money. They're still going to have all those people coming in and parking and spending all that money in for the parking and in the cafeteria and in the gift shop, and they're still doing the same thing they do.
Let me stop you here because I know we're running out of time. What would you tell someone who's listening to this show that maybe has someone in the hospital or maybe they're scheduled for surgery? They're looking at things. What can they do besides checking to see if their hospital, if there's a, you know, a rating, like in New Jersey. I don't know if this is in existence in the state of Washington. I have no idea.
Right.
But if they can't get that information, what can they or their family or friends do when they are in the hospital?
Okay, what I can say is that my field is business, and their field is medical. But you know what, Donna? When it comes to your family or your loved one or a close friend, you have to take the bull by the horns. You have to say to them, okay, my loved one is being operated on. What do you recommend I do before the operation to avoid infection? There's a soap. I know there's a soap that you can wash yourself down with. The stethoscope, something as simple as a stethoscope, we now have to make demands. We have to take, as I said, the bull by the horns. We have to be heard, and we have to let them know that we are well aware of infections, and I want you to know now, my family better not get this infection. You need to have that stethoscope in that room with your family member. You do not let that doctor take that stethoscope to the next patient who may have MRSA, and then come back to you and use that same stethoscope on you. You have to always have a family member, whenever there's visiting hours, a family member must be there at all times. Not the same member, we were lucky, I come from a big family, and we had a family member there at all times. We did not know enough to open our mouths. We did not know enough to find out before my dad was operated. We knew nothing. We didn't even know what MRSA was. But you need to open your mouth. If they're doing something that you don't like, you tell them. You tell them, because you know what? This is the matter of life and death. Not to say you need to be nasty, polite and respectful, but you let them know that you're watching every move they make. And then maybe then they'll be on their toes.
Julia Hillas has been my guest today. Now, this is a very important subject matter. She has a website that you can go to. You can go to Julia Pilas, and that's JuliaPilasAuthor.com. JuliaPilasAuthor.com. Check out her information. This is not a joke. This is important. It's real. I've known situations firsthand, and it's very important. And having a patient advocate is mandatory. I've heard this story so many times, it is not to be taken lightly. So it's up to us as consumers, as individuals, to be assertive. Julia's book, it is valuable reading. But more than that, go to her website, Julia Pilas Author, JuliaPilas Author.com. Julia, it's been a pleasure having you as a guest, and I wish you the very best in all that you do. We're taking a break. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. Telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, I've got my newsletter, by the way, was sent out this afternoon. So those of you who are on my mailing list will be getting it. If you haven't gotten it already, then it'll be there, and it'll be up on my website in 24 hours. So you'll have that option. If you want to go to DelphiInternational.com, you'll see the monthly newsletter for December that's up. And it's going to have a listing of all the different activities and things that are coming up for me, and also information about if you have a special story about the paranormal, if you've had an experience of your own that has been very meaningful to you, I would love to have you send it to me. I'm putting together a book. We're giving ourselves a year to gather 100 stories from people, and we don't care what genre it is, if it's out of the body, if it's a near-death experience, if it's a ghost encounter, whatever it may be, you're happening. I'd love to hear from you, and of course I'll need contact information so we can be able to identify you, and if you don't want to use your entire name, fine, but we will need that for the publishing company should they want to have a release form signed by you, because sometimes publishing houses do that. But anyway, send me your story. You can send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Or you can send it to me via snail mail. The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Again, all kinds of stuff is in my newsletter. And, oh, I just really enjoy doing this. Sometimes it takes me a full day to be able to do the newsletter because there is a lot of work that goes into getting it out to all of you. But if you want to be on that mailing list where you get a copy, all you have to do is send me an email and say, Donna, add me to your list, and I'll be glad to do that. We've got a caller on the line waiting. Let's go to her. And who are you? Where are you calling from? This is Donna.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
I'm calling from Farmington Hills, Michigan.
Hi. Well, is it warming up for you?
Yes, yeah, slowly. Slowly.
Oh, good. We've got so much growth here in the Pacific Northwest. You'd swear it was spring. We have had the most moderate temperatures. It has just been amazing. The crocus are already popping up their green shoots, and the irises are growing, and the rhodies are sprouting, and it's like Mother Nature is just saying, we're all green here. Woohoo! It's warm. We're coming out early. It is just going to be glorious this year if these warm temperatures continue. Of course, we're known to have sometimes those real cold snaps that will come in all of a sudden, but maybe we'll get lucky this year. Lisa, let's get down to business with you, dear. First thing I am looking at is a sense of weariness, and I feel as if you've done a real good job with taking care of a lot of loose ends, but you seem to be looking at what's in front of you and saying, oh, my goodness, is it ever going to be done? There are so many things I need to get to, and it just feels like it's never ending. Well, it's sort of like housekeeping. You never get through it. You can have everything perfectly, and within an hour, things can just totally be absolutely topsy-turvy. especially if you have family and animals. It's just amazing how, no matter how hard you work, it's always there. So it's being able to maintain a pace, and that is what you need to do. You need to know you're never going to absolutely catch up 100%, but you can keep a pace where you feel like you can have some time for yourself. And that's important. You're a very creative person, and I would say give yourself the opportunity, the permission to do something that's totally whimsical, that's fun, that's going to bring you in contact with some new people. You need a break in your lifestyle that's going to be what I consider liberating. I know I have one friend that for her, one of the most joyous activities that she has, she goes to a course every weekend when she can attend it, A Course in Miracles. She just loves the people. She said, I feel like I get this wonderful infusion of all this joy and these terrific people. She said, it's absolutely marvelous. She calls it her spiritual nutrition. And for her, it's that. I have another friend that for her, it's climbing mountains. She loves to go out and climb mountains, and this is her gift to herself. She said it clears out the cobwebs, it does all kinds of things. Somebody else I know loves to do woodworking, or, you know, there's just so many options. One person I know does miniature buildings. We'll spend hours on something that I probably would just go, this is enough for me, I'm ready to have a temper tantrum. I would have no patience for it. But all of us are different, and you need to give yourself that gift of doing something that is whimsical, fun, and just relax, because your responsibilities are going to be there. They are not disappearing into the ethers. You just need to know how to relax, keep a pace, and take things in stride. What would you like to ask me today, Lisa?
Well, I'm kind of concerned about somebody, and I'm wondering when I'd be hearing from them. I've texted them and I've called them, and we've been very close, and I know that they've had family illness and they're going on too, but mm-hmm. I just wondered, when do you see me hearing from them?
Well, I'd say lighten up on this, because this person would need support more than anything else. And what you've got here is this individual is going through a lot of different emotions, and they are wanting to be reclusive. This is a pattern that they've had all of their life. When they get under a lot of pressure, when there is a lot of emotional drain and anxiety, and again, this is a repeating pattern with them, they pull in like a snail or a turtle does into their shell. So the best thing you can do is not pressure them. The best thing you can do is send them maybe a card, or if they have email, send them a nice email and just say, know you're loved, know you're cared for, and I care. Or, you know, do it your own way. Do it in your own way. But keep it sort of on the light side. And just let them know if they want to call and talk with you that this is fine. You're there as a friend, as someone who is very supportive and caring about them. People many times, when they are going through very, very difficult issues, especially if it's with family members, I know of more than one individual right now who have family members that are suffering from debilitating illnesses. They retreat. They really get to the point where they're so drained that they don't want to cope with anybody or their questions. They're very defensive. They are overextended emotionally, mentally, physically, and emotionally, and they don't realize that there's a lot of people that care that would be happy to help. So you do that. It's just something that happens with many, many people. So if you can just be there, don't stress over it, and whenever they come into your mind, send them a lot of love and a lot of light in prayer, or in meditation, whatever is most comfortable for you, just surround them with it and just let them know that you're there. So it's a combination of a couple of things that you can do, and then get on with your own life. Does that help you at all?
Yeah, I just wondered, though, if you saw them getting in touch with me, though, at some point.
No, not right away. They will, eventually. But you're wanting to force something here. You can't.
Okay.
It's just not going to work.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome, Lisa. You have a wonderful evening now. This is Donna Thiebaud.
Right.
Give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. We're taking a break for a moment, and we'll be back. Oh, have a pad of paper and a pen handy. I have a chocolate shortcake recipe for you. Uh-huh. Shortcake. Chocolate. Woo-hoo! Good stuff. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Thiebaud. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Thiebaud's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Thiebaud's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Thiebaud and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Thiebaud to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. 888-815-9756 is the number to call into. And I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Now, also, don't forget, those of you in the Pacific Northwest, the event of the year for we ladies is the Northwest Women's Show. And that's being held at the Quest Convention Center, March 5th. 6th and 7th, and I'm going to have a booth there. This event is wonderful. Last year we did something that was very different called Girl Talk, and I was invited along with a couple of other people to present speakers, and I had six dynamic women last year, and I've got a powerhouse this year. We're going to have 3 hours back-to-back. Each speaker will be there available for about a half an hour. It'll be question and answer, interaction. The first hour is going to be dedicated to financial well-being. The second hour is going to be developing energy healing, etc. And the third hour is going to be about animals, their care, and other things that I think you will find of interest. So if you're in the Seattle area, do plan on joining us. It is absolutely marvelous. Now, you can go to the NorthwestWomenShow.com, and you will find all of the information you need regarding tickets, where to get them, discounts that are available to you, and all of the different events that will be going on. So we'll be giving you all of that detailed information. Meanwhile, it's just a joy to be in the positioning of being prepared for this and to have these wonderful women from the Pacific Northwest that are going to be sharing their skills and talents with you, and you're going to be able to meet them one-on-one. And I hope you'll come by and say hello to me as well. By the way, I'm going to be in a booth 407, and I will be doing many sessions for people during the entire weekend. So I look forward to meeting you, and it is an event I always enjoy being a part of. It's very intense, but, oh, it is amazing what you have there. It is fun. Tell your friends, make it a girls' weekend, and come on out to the Northwest Women's Show in Seattle, Washington. You will not regret it. It is going to be just absolutely delightful. 888-815-9756. Oh, also, In my newsletter, you'll find information about an upcoming broadcast on Achieve Radio with Monique Chapman. And this is a friend of mine. I've known her for years. She's a fellow broadcaster, and I've been doing a show with her occasionally for over almost 2 years now. And we just have a great time. So I invite you to come along to Achieve Radio, Monique Chapman's Walking with Spirit, and you can go there and listen to the show live. It'll be on March 9th from 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific time, and I will be taking calls on that show as well. Okay, I said we had a chocolate recipe. Here we are, the very first day in February. Valentine's Day is around the corner. What if you wanted to fix something a little different? Make that special, special meal. Maybe a breakfast or a dessert. Well, this is called Chocolate Shortcake Towers. And my girlfriend sent this to me, and I said, ooh, yum, this is decadent. And I think I might make a change to it. But let me give you the recipe as my girlfriend Mary gave it to me. Now, to make the shortcake, these are the ingredients you're going to need. You're going to need a cup of butter. And all of this has to be at room temperature. All the ingredients must be at room temperature. You need a cup of butter, a half a cup of light brown sugar, 1 1/4 ounces of dark chocolate, and you want to grate it. 1 3/4 ounces dark chocolate grated, and 2 1/2 cups of all-purpose flour. 2 1/2 cups of all-purpose flour. Now that's the ingredients. Those are the ingredients for your shortcake. Now, you're going to need these other ingredients to top off this yummy chocolate shortcake. You're going to need 2 cups of fresh raspberries. 2 cups of fresh raspberries. Use the frozen if you can't get fresh. Obviously, this time of the year, it's pretty tough to get fresh raspberries. 2 tablespoons of confectioner's sugar. 2 tablespoons of confectioner's sugar. And then you need 1 1/4 cups of heavy cream. 1 1/4 cups of heavy cream. You need 3 tablespoons of milk, 3 tablespoons of milk, 3 ounces of white chocolate, and this is going to be melted, 3 ounces of white chocolate melted. And then you're going to need a little bit of extra confectionery sugar because you're going to want to dust the dessert. Okay, here we go. Now, you want a cookie sheet, spray it with nonstick cooking spray, and then this is what you're going to do to make your shortcake. You're going to beat together the butter and the sugar until they're light and fluffy, and then you beat in your grated dark chocolate, and then gently mix in your flour, and you're going to have a very stiff dough. So use a mixer. If you have a dough hook, that's even better. But just use a mixer. This is going to work out better. Then your next step is you roll out your dough that you have on a lightly floured surface, and you want to stamp out 18 3-inch rounds. So you're going to need a round cookie cutter, 3-inch round cookie cutter. Then you want to put the rounds on your prepared greased cookie sheet and bake it in a preheated oven at 400 degrees for 10 minutes until they're nice and crisp and golden. And then you just let them cool on the cookie sheet. Now, to make the sauce, which is called coulis, you want to take and put aside about 1/2 cup of your raspberries. The rest of those raspberries you put in a food processor along with your confectionery sugar, and you process it to a puree. You could also do this in a blender. And you make your puree. Then you rub it through a strainer to remove the seeds. If you don't want to remove the seeds, you can eliminate that step. But if you really want a nice, thin, delicious puree without the seeds, you've got to put it through a strainer. Then you're going to chill that in the refrigerator. And then you also take 2 teaspoons of the cream. You put that aside, and you whip the remainder of the cream until it's just holding its shape. Then you fold in the milk and also your 3 ounces of melted white chocolate. Now, this is what you do to create your chocolate shortcake tower. For each tower, you're going to spoon a little bit of your raspberry sauce onto a serving plate, and you drop small dots of the reserved cream onto your raspberry sauce around the edge of the plate, and then you take a toothpick, and you drag it through the cream to make a pattern. You can actually make hearts experiment with it, just drawing a toothpick just through the dot, right through the center, very gently, and it'll make into a heart. Great thing for Valentine's Day. Then what you want to do, and you want it on the outer edge. Remember, you've got the sauce in the plate, but you want to make your design on the outer edge because you're going to put your shortcake round on the plate right in the middle, and you spoon a little bit of your chocolate cream on it, and then you put a few raspberries, two or three raspberries, and then you put another piece of shortcake and the cream, and then you put another shortcake. So you're going to have three shortcakes, and the top, you just dust it with confectionery sugar. So you're going to layer it. And you have got a chocolate shortcake tower. Yum. It makes enough for six people. So it is going to be something that's not expected. Oh, is it ever going to be good and different? Something that most people would not expect. Well, my goodness, it looks like we're almost out of time. So I want to let you know who we've got on schedule this week. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about life-changing weight loss. Dr. Kent Sassy is a fascinating man. He's been involved with bariatric surgery and other things that people go to when they're in extreme situation with obesity. But as a physician, he has found things that really, really work for people, because if you don't change your mind, you're not going to change other things. Cosmic Conversations, Stephen Martin on Wednesday, The Extraterrestrial Answer book with Jim Maroney on Thursday, and Mass Casualties, Michael Anthony on Friday. Great group. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. Wherever you are, take care of yourself. Be an advocate for wellness. You're number one. Talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.